Bonjour, hola, and hello, everyone. Welcome to Oysters Distributed Discussions. Join me, Allie Green, and a special guest each week as we elevate the conversations around all things remote work. We will move away from basic tips and dive in deep, having discussions around current remote work challenges, solutions, the future of work, and social impact. So grab a drink, go for a walk, or pull up a chair and enjoy this week's episode of Distributed Discussions. Welcome to Distributed Discussions. I'm excited to introduce today Tilly, the head of people and talent at Impala. In her role, she focuses on how to foster an incredible work environment and culture, something everybody needs a little bit of insight to in 2021. Hi, Tilly. How are you doing today?
Hey, Ali. I am very well, thanks. Really great to be on here. Super excited.
Yeah, I'm very excited to talk to you as well. I was hoping you could kick us off by telling us a little bit more around Impala, what it is and what you do for them.
Yeah. So Impala is, in very short, an infrastructure API for hotels. It does get a lot more complex, but if I do get into that, I think I'll be here forever. So really, we're kind of an API travel tech company. My role within Impala is obviously head of people and talent, as you said. So I lead on all things kind of on the internal people ops side. So things like, you know, managing culture, onboarding people, you know, socials, community, everything around that, everything in between, as well as everything on the talent and hiring side, and alongside fantastic teammates within each of those teams as well.
Yeah, well, I'm really interested in talking today because especially a company that deals with travel contingent technology, obviously businesses have shifted quite a lot in the past year. As I was reading more about Impala for our conversation, I noticed that there was an intention to always be remote first, even though you have a London office. So we're definitely going to talk a little bit more about what that means from a culture perspective and how you've helped influence that. But I'm curious where you are dialing in from today and how did remote work play a role in where you're living or working from, especially this past year?
Yeah, so I'm actually in the Cotswolds at the moment, so south central, southwest England. So yeah, you know, moved out of London a few months ago because of the pandemic. Sort of my husband and I realized that it's probably going to be a bit nicer to spend a few months in the countryside. So we moved out of London, but to sort of go in a bit more to the sort of what we've done throughout the pandemic in terms of where we've moved to. So I actually have my parents now live in Australia. So early 2019 in March, February, we were sort of a bit London might be for a couple of months, not great with this new coronavirus that's coming about. So we actually went to Australia and stayed 6 months, which is really amazing, super unique to be able to do and just work from there, fully functioning. So yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing that you were able to go and see family as well. How was the time zone transition, working close to the hub of the business and then going so far into future time zones? How did you handle that transition and what did you learn about remote work through that?
Yeah, so the time zone, I personally really liked it. It left loads of time for deep work. And it kind of meant that, you get everything done in the morning in terms of responding to people and you've just got hours to sort of, get into stuff. So I didn't struggle with it too much, very much. There was evening calls, of course, and sort of managing a few people in the team. I had to catch up with them and make sure they weren't feeling like they were being left out, because that was pretty big to me as well. So yeah, we actually, kind of based on that is why we've recently introduced this async initiative at Impala, which is actually kind of replicating, all the benefits that I saw when we were working. I was working fully asynchronously basically in Australia. So we're kind of enabling that a bit more across the team who are in the same time zone. So really sort of enabling that flexibility and that ownership of your own time and time for deep work. So yeah, it's certainly actually had a big influence on how we're doing things now that we're back at home.
Yeah, I love one of the things that this year has brought about is challenging the status quo. And one of those things for many companies, even if they had experience working with, co-located teams or distributed offices or even remote work, is it was still a meeting and synchronous heavy work environment. Could you tell us a little bit more about what the asynchronous program looks like at Impala? What were the major challenges that people faced adopting to this new way of communicating, and what benefits have you seen?
Yeah, so we sort of only released it earlier this quarter, so earlier in January or February, really off the back of actually seeing that everyone was struggling with, you know, integrating work and life. So coming back from Australia, it was about 6 months ago from when we introduced this. It was always something that I wanted to do, but we were kind of like, you know, we'll do it when we're a bit more set up, when we're a bit bigger, when the structures are going to be sort of better in place and we're not sort of building a product at the same time. And actually, you know, off the back of seeing how people were coping, or rather sort of were struggling to cope, we were like, you know, why not introduce this now, you know, sooner than later, really allow people to own their time and own their flexibility, and, you know, manage, for example, if you've got kids at home, you know, manage your life more around that and work when it suits you more. So we always had like flexible core hours, but we sort of decided to go a step further there.
Well, yeah, I know for me, like, you see such a benefit of asynchronous work for people with different obligations in their life, whether they're parents or caring for elderly. And hearing you talk about your experience in Australia makes me laugh, because I always joke that I'm solidly like an afternoon person. And so I'll wake up quite early, but I don't get that kick of energy to focus on work until late into the afternoon. And so it's like interesting living in Europe. And while I could work at any hour, and I work with people in Europe, in the US, it doesn't matter, I still like kind of hone in on that afternoon time for heads down work. And so I know how asynchronous work has helped me like be able to like slowly wake up, enjoy the sunshine in the morning, live that like slow Spanish lifestyle, and then start working when the motivation kicks.
Totally. Yeah, we've seen a lot of people actually who are suddenly being like, oh, thank God, I'm like a night person. Like, I enjoy working at midnight. And it's like, okay, cool. Like, as long as you're not overworking, great. And then some people who kind of get up at 6 and sort of really enjoy finishing at 3 or whenever that may be. For me, I'm all about the no alarms, sort of wake up at, you know, late morning kind of thing. Totally.
Nice. The no alarm movement has begun.
Yes.
So let's take a little bit of a step back and walk me through more about the Impala remote journey. So when and why did Impala decide truly to operate as a remote business?
Yeah, so even before I joined, which was 2.5 years ago, when Impala was like 11 people, Impala was a remote company. So I went from a, you know, fully co-located, very traditional job to this remote job before it was cool, I guess. And my work friends are like, oh, working from home, like, yeah, right. You know, like, couldn't really get their heads around it. So, I mean, I was all on board. I thought it was so amazing and like a really, you know, cool new thing and a cool new company. That's actually why I wanted to join Impala in the first place, or one of the reasons. So I think, you know, Ben and Charlie, the two of the founders, decided to be remote like immediately. They knew that there were great people across Europe that they, you know, wanted to be able to have on the team. They also didn't want someone to not be able to join just because they couldn't live in London or wouldn't, you know, want to live in London. I also think Ben and Charlie just kind of wanted to be able to travel around Europe and, you know, live in Berlin or live wherever they want. So yeah, I think it was super natural. It very much aligned with both of their personalities. Since I've started, we've actually experimented with like almost all spectrums of the kind of remote work, you know, on the remote work spectrum. So we were obviously fully remote when I joined. Once we reached about 15 people or something. So this was like a year later or something. So we didn't grow too much for a while. We decided to trial out like a co-located basis in London. So we got this lovely office around Old Street, and literally 3 days in, we were like, no way are we doing like a fully co-located thing, right? Like, I think everyone was so used to having that ownership and like full autonomy, etc. And we would like, you know, having a fully co-located kind of environment was really just sort of felt like it was taking a lot of that away. And you know, everyone loved the remote lifestyle. So we very much kind of pivoted from having a co-located, you know, full-time thing. we moved on to having then like a hybrid thing, which is trending a bit at the moment. Like everyone's covered, you know, very much looking forward to being able to do that. And how that worked for us was anyone could work remotely, like at home any day of the week, but anyone who was not an engineer basically was based in London, and there were 2 days of the week where it was compulsory to be in the office. And there were like flexible hours around being in the office, but really we wanted to pull out the real benefits that we wanted to get from being in the office, you know, like spontaneous ideation, you know, collaboration time, etc. So really concentrate that, but also allow for that sort of flexibility. You know, you can go on extended trips away from London. And so that really worked, and people really enjoyed that because it was that community side as well. Obviously, with COVID, that changed quite quickly. And now we are going to be doing kind of that hybrid, but not compulsory. So sort of we'll have a London office. It'll be a lot smaller. People can hop in and hop out when they want, but there's no requirements.
Yeah, I think that's a really fascinating history. If we could go back to the decision to get that original office, what was the motivation behind that initial experiment with trying to move from remote to co-located?
Yeah, it was everyone who wasn't in engineering happened to be based in London at the time. And it just so happened that there was just like five of us at the time, right? And so it just kind of ended up that we'd been just meeting up and co-working from different places together naturally. And we found a lot of benefit from that. We were like, oh, it's actually, you know, nice to be able to see each other and stuff. And so we thought that since there's, you know, only five of us, it's a good time to trial out this sort of full co-location thing. And again, you know, really wanted to, we thought the sort of possibilities for ideation and collaboration and everything were like a benefit there. And we quickly realized that they're not, they don't outweigh the kind of benefits of having that flexibility with remote working.
Yeah, interesting. And those are the same benefits that you describe in a hybrid environment when you were operating in a way where people were, you know, encouraged to come in at least twice a week for that time of like free brainstorming, ideation, spontaneous conversations. Did you have, and I think this is a question a lot of other companies and people ops people will be interested in, they're navigating if like remote is going to be right for them in the future. How did you like structure people's days or the expectations around what a day in the office would look like versus a day not in the office, so that you could encourage people to actually like talk to each other and have that spontaneity instead of just working at their desk in this office space?
Yeah, I think really just like being intentional and explicit was the trick for us. And so we named the days where people are in the office like collaboration days. And so really kind of prefacing that we're there to work together. And, you know, we planned meetings with each other on those like collaboration days there. So really intentionality. And because we've always been a remote culture, like a remote first kind of environment, we had a lot of resources and tools in place already to support people on the working from home side. So, you know, just telling, you know, that people have always had a bit of support on how to work best remotely, you know, how to, you know, healthy habits working remotely and everything as well. But, you know, even to the intentionality and kind of being explicit point, there were people who'd never worked from home before and who sort of were used to being in an office, so sort of only went into the office. And we actually were like, you know, you have to trial out a week of working from home, because it's like you kind of flex the muscles, right? You build out the muscles for being able to work really well from home. And genuinely, 100% of people who did have to do that, you know, when it was their first time working from home, just absolutely loved it and were like the biggest converts at the end. So yeah.
Yeah, it's great to hear. I think there's all this like sort of fear and maybe anxiety around switching up your behaviors and doing something that seems non-obvious, kind of under that realm of like, oh, if it's not broken, why fix it? And so there's this idea of like, oh, if we go into the office and we work well there, why would we change it up? But I love what you said about remote work and like it's a skill you have to learn. And I think over time, we're going to see this like remote work acumen be a huge part of leadership and development moving forward. So encouraging employees to try that is really cool. What other ways do you support like a remote first mentality at Impala?
Yeah. So I think actually one of the biggest issues with remote working and certainly kind of asynchronous working sort of that we've recently added on top is actually like making sure people don't overwork. Like we've never worried about anyone like, you know, slacking off or something or, you know, not doing their work. Like literally we are intentional about making sure people switch off. And so some really good tips, I think, for remote working are really thinking about that as like one of the biggest issues, because obviously that impacts kind of well-being and morale and you know, general motivation and burnout levels. So yeah, we really sort of we talk quite a lot about switching off and avoiding burnout and how to do it, how to recognize it in others as well, how to have that conversation.
Yeah. Are there any like examples that you think are like particularly like surprising or that are quite common with the people that work at Impala and how they like actually are able to walk away from their computer at the end of their work day? Like what works well for people?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, and it's something I've recently tried to explore a bit and sort of open up the conversation with the team and had some really good suggestions from people. So a couple of people mentioned that they sort of, you know, book in time to call a friend, sort of, or maybe a different friend at certain times each day. Like some people sign up for a online, what's it like, PT session. And then they've got that like pressure to switch off and get ready and everything, kind of turn off. Like for me, I'm quite boring. I just like set alarms on my phone because I find it so easy to just like suddenly realize it's 8 p.m. and like I've just like worked for so many more hours than I thought. Oh, what else are there? There were some really great ones. But I think generally, especially, you know, once we're out of COVID, making plans, meeting up with people, actually like working in co-working offices is really good as well, because you kind of get kicked out at 5:30 anyway.
Yeah, I think it'll be really interesting for people that have only experienced remote work during the pandemic to have the world open up to them again and learn. Like I'm a huge like coffee shop like worker.
Oh, totally.
And so I'm one of those people that like, I love going to coffee shops. I also like love where I'm living, how many local like coffee shops there are. They're not chains. So I'm like very aware of the fact that they're a small business and I don't want to overstay my welcome. So it's like, go there, work hard, drink a lot of coffee and then like get out. So the next 100%. Person can like enjoy my table. And that's been like my trick, is just like trying to be a good worker and a good customer at the same time.
Yeah, totally. It's funny. Yeah. There's so many people that have never experienced like full remote working, like the full benefits of it, right? Which are like literally like pop into a coffee shop or, you know, go for a nice walk. Yeah.
Is there anything that you think the newcomers are going to be like really surprised by when the world opens up and they experience remote work the way that you and I have before the pandemic?
So I think for me, like one of the most amazing things about remote working is like I've worked in some like amazing places across the world, and it just allows for this whole degree of life flexibility that you would never have before, right? So I've worked like from Positano with like a view of the whole Amalfi Coast in front of me. I worked from like obviously Australia, view from like New York City skyline. Like it's just something else, you know. It's remote working is not all kind of being huddled in your pajamas like on the same sofa.
Yeah, that was a challenge for me when the quarantine first like went into place around Europe last year. I was living in a studio apartment, and similar to you, I was like, oh yeah, like I'm so used to just working from New York or South Africa or like this coffee shop or that co-working space. And I was like, okay, well, I can go from the sofa to the kitchen table to back to the sofa, but laying the other way. So I can't imagine people that have only had this experience, and I can't wait for them to experience remote as we know it. So I want to dive in a little bit more to your role in people operations. And so part of, you know, when I think of people ops and think of creating a culture is creating expectations. And I know that's a boring way sometimes to describe culture, but I think that for remote making sure people do know what to expect from their colleagues, what they should expect from the culture and the workplace itself can be incredibly important. So how have you supported the Impala team in setting expectations in terms of communication, collaboration, working hours, which we just discussed a little bit? Like, how do they let people know if they're turning off for the day? Anything you could share more about there?
Yeah, I think this is certainly an issue and something we've really seen ramped up again with the async addition that we've added. And I say like async, right? But this, and so it's a big thing because we're like all in Europe, but you know, eventually when we're hiring globally, this is something that's not just like an async buzzword. It's like what's really going to sort of be true. And so with the flexible working hours, for example, we've had to be really clear on, you know, expectations, especially around internal response times, for example. And so, when, you know, there's a confusion, I think, with the async working, which is, you know, really getting your head around the mindset that it's okay to be away for any reason. You don't have to be on all the time, right? And so kind of getting your head around that is quite tricky. And sort of in line with that, you know, internal response times is really like a habit to get used to not have to reply immediately, especially because we use Slack, which is like really fast paced and like immediate. So we have tried to, you know, be really explicit about that. But sort of beyond that, we're rolling out a no Slack morning like trial. And really the purpose of that is just to sort of as a short term thing to just like habit build and make sure people kind of like normalize the fact that it's okay to not have to be on Slack immediately. I think in terms of work hours, we don't actually have like 9 to 5 work hours, right? So it's certainly difficult and certainly like almost like the biggest issue for me at the moment is how to manage people's expectations so that they're not like sort of, you know, we've removed the parameters for which they know sort of what's okay and what's not okay to sort of clock off. So really it's sort of full-time workload is the expectation, and it's at a manager level that we kind of deal with setting those expectations and allowing time for reflection on how that's gone, or, you know, talking about what's been missed or something. And sort of, yeah, does that answer the question? I'm not sure it did.
Yeah, I really like the idea of trialing things culturally as a way to teach behaviors, not just to do them for the sake of like culture building. And so it was really interesting to me about what you said is like trialing out no Slack mornings, not to make sure that like forever you have to do that as a company, but so that people start learning that it's okay to be proactive and saying I'm having a no Slack morning. And I think that's really a different way to think about culture, because oftentimes companies will say, oh, we're going to do this activity, and then it's like part of our culture and we're doing it forever. Whereas the way you describe it, it's like, we're going to do this activity as a way for people to learn how to operate as part of the team.
Yeah, very much kind of love that. And something else we've also done is kind of found on Slack that people are like, oh, you know, someone doesn't know I'm away, they're going to be expecting a response. And even when you talk about, you know, you can say that's not true as many times as you kind of want, but it's still difficult to really understand and live that. So we've introduced like a little Slack icon to show when you're away and to be like, you know, it's completely okay. Like this person might not reply for 12 hours if they have the Slack emoji. So just like set expectations around that. And, you know, give a bit of support for how to actually work around when something's urgent and that person's sort of asynchronous or not online at that time.
Yeah. And what are some ways that you handle urgent matters, or how would you even define like what is urgent in your line of work?
Yeah, I think it's something that we've intentionally actually not defined like what is urgent on a company level. And that's because, you know, I think it almost kind of sets an additional rule that people need to worry about. They're like, oh, it's not, I don't know which kind of level of urgency it fits into. So really it's sort of a best judgment thing. And I think a lot of remote working and asynchronous working is about best judgment. You know, sometimes you'll have to work at 8 p.m. or something if something is super urgent, but that's not normal and that's not kind of what's expected.
Yeah. And I love the idea too of like putting the responsibility back on an individual. Like you are an adult, you're highly skilled. That's why you're working, you know, at a company like Impala. So you can use your own judgment to make decisions from time to time. I love like the power shift of remote work, bringing it back to each employee rather than a company just like mandating things down to their people around things like urgency or importance and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as long as people are aware that, you know, if they're not sure if it's urgent or not, you know, the best, you know, just ask your manager and they'll be able to help you. Like, as long as people are aware, like, don't feel like there's a barrier to being able to ask that. I think that's a good environment.
Yeah, awesome. I want to go back to something you said a little while ago where you were, you know, using asynchronous, not as a buzzword, but as a true way of operating in the future. And what especially stuck out to me when you made that comment was right now you have a lot of employees like only within Europe and European time zones. But what will happen when we grow internationally, I believe is more or less what you said. So I'd love to dig in a little bit more around your hiring plans, if you have made a decision of trying to hire internationally, and what that looks like right now at Impala.
Yeah. So yeah, we've always hired in Europe. And the next step for us now is like hiring globally across the whole world. So we made the decision recently that we'll sort of reactively hire globally. So if someone applies, like we'll take them on board. But there's a lot that we want to still do around sort of really, really like being able to do that properly, if that makes sense. I haven't phrased that very well. But I think, you know, it's something that we've certainly planned, but unlike expanding from, you know, we hire in London to we hire across Europe, which is all in the same time zone, hiring globally comes with a lot of additional kind of overhead to consider. So we're kind of working that out on the back end and everything before we jump right in. But, you know, it's really something that we really want to do now, especially as the team's growing but also the product's growing, right? And we've got a more global product. So I think it'll be super exciting. And there's like a whole pool of fantastic people that can join our team from this. And I'm really, really excited.
Yeah, it's awesome. And what are some of the challenges that are top of mind that you're trying to solve for with hiring internationally?
Yeah, so really kind of thinking about culture. And by that, I mean, you know, for this person, how good is it going to be for them to be like the first person in, you know, the US or in like South Africa or anywhere across the world, like India? And it's always going to be a bit chicken and egg, right? There is always going to be a first person that we'd hire in that country. But really making sure that that person kind of knows what they're getting into as well. Like it's going to be a mutual fit for them. They're not going to feel kind of left out. And really making sure that we've got the structures to support them outside of Europe. It's easy to get there, but there's certainly kind of tweaks and sort of really explicit considerations around that fact.
Yeah. Right now, what is your hiring process? Like, how do you ensure candidates will be successful?
So we have as our first kind of technical stage, an online screening form. And it's sort of three or four questions which really relate to the role and general mindset around kind of problem solving within the context of sort of what they'd be working on within the role. And that helps us screen for kind of like written comms, like clarity, which is obviously really important as a remote and async first company. But like we actually also do that for an added level of inclusivity. So it is, I almost think kind of CVs reinforce, you know, systemic inequality. You know, it kind of reinforces, it kind of CVs alone can just reinforce that sort of concept of people with a better sort of more lucky almost background sort of get the, you know, better roles if you're just relying on CVs. So we use this online screening form as an additional sort of data point for us to map. And additionally, you know, to the inclusivity point, it's easy to be like, oh, I know all the good companies in, you know, Europe and all the good unis in Europe, for example. But, you know, we obviously don't know all the great companies in like India or Australia or anywhere outside of Europe, right? And so it adds that additional level so we can see beyond just the CV.
Yeah, and that'll be important as you continue to hire internationally. Like, you know, how are you making decisions without leaning on sort of these more traditional benchmarks of past success? Are there any ways that you're thinking right now that you want to make changes to your hiring process as you open it up internationally, or additional things that you think you'll likely have to screen for to ensure candidates will be successful? You know, you mentioned like what happens with the first person in the US. Like, are there any sort of qualities or competencies that you think these new joiners will need to be successful?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So we've toyed a bit with the idea of adding like a async ability or like remote ability kind of component to the hiring process. And so really we've kind of boiled that down to like, okay, what are we actually screening for, right? Like, is this person autonomous? Do they have like good clear comms? Like, are they happy to sort of take a project and lead it without sort of needing that hand-holding almost? So we were like, is it actually, you know, is it worse and more, like non-inclusive to add sort of too much more around async ability or, you know, remote ability? And does that just mean that we'd hire people who've done it before as opposed to people who would be very good at doing it? So I think we'll certainly do more and assess more in the sort of first interviews and technical interviews around autonomy. But I don't imagine we'll really change the process too much to take that into account. But certainly, you know, things like on the front end, so getting, you know, what's the word? Recruiters on board to source people more globally, so kind of with more localized or more global context or kind of context in different talent hotspots is something that we would need to do. And that's a really interesting challenge, I think, actually.
Yeah, I think so too. It's fascinating to me just like the different ways that people are used to searching for jobs based off of their location. And like, you think of a tool like LinkedIn, and for certain countries, it's such an obvious choice of like where to show your professional self. In other countries, it's not used at all. And so learning like, how do people look for jobs? How do they showcase their talents is going to be a problem that recruiters need to solve moving forward. So I'm curious to see how that world unfolds in the next, you know, 6 months, a year, 2 years.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting. Is that like a whole other sort of realm to tap into?
It's like the more people get confident with remote work and the more like people ops people get confident with remote work, the more questions there are in some ways as well. So yeah, I'm curious, like, for you, like, you know, on this brink of the next stage of Impala, you've seen like all of these different iterations of the culture already, from the office to hybrid to fully distributed around Europe to, you know, soon distributed around the world. Like, what are the questions that are top of mind for you that you think people ops people should be asking each other?
Yeah, I think like the biggest thing is, how are you going to, like, as a people ops person or, you know, working in a people department, how are we going to be explicit about company culture as we get more remote? And so I think you can design a culture that's really meaningful and based on kind of genuine experience that people really care about, which makes it easy to sustain a positive, like, remote culture, right? So we've had people join recently who say that our culture and community is like so much stronger and actually like tangible than, as like a fully remote team, than they've experienced in fully co-located teams. And so really that's because we were super, like, we spent, you know, 6 months thinking about how to really make that true and how to really make sure that our values and our cultures like felt. So that would be the first thing for me, like really, really, how are we gonna make that true? I also think like a lot of people mistake hiring locally and allowing working from home with, like, you know, mistake it for remote and distributed working, and I think they're very different. And I've seen, and I've spoken to a lot of people who kind of seen this as false advertising almost. It's like on jobs it says, you know, fully remote, etc., but it actually means you have to be based in London though. And so really I'd be, you know, for people thinking about moving to a more remote basis, I'd be thinking about, what's our plan for actually allowing people to be hired, like in Europe or within, you know, XYZ time zone.
Yeah. And I know one of the challenges, and this is how you and I got introduced, is like, sometimes I feel like companies are putting these limitations on like, oh, we have to hire in the UK, but it's okay if it's remote, because they just don't know how to actually tangibly hire people in other ways. And that's, you know, the goal of Oyster is to make that process easier for people. Could you share a little bit more about like how you got in touch with Oyster and like what sort of administrative or compliance related challenges that you're seeing being solved for?
Oh my God, the challenges. It was like a minefield. Like, honest, like, yeah, it was, you know, dealing with contractors, like having to employ people as contractors, meaning they kind of didn't get the same access to kind of benefits or sort of contractual terms. You know, dealing with individual payroll companies for each individual from different countries across Europe, like making people set up Estonian visas, which is super random. And then, you know, even setting up French micro entreprise companies, which is as expensive and confusing as it sounds. So it was like, you know, I had to keep on top of all of that. I had to deal with different legal and accounting issues for each country and sort of have a different contact for each. So it was a bit of a nightmare, and it did stop us from being able to sort of fully just be like, okay, we can hire anywhere. We always had a preference for the UK, I guess, because like just logistically, not like formally, but you know, I'd be like, oh, okay, thank God. I don't have to deal with another like legal or accounting person. So with Oyster, clearly that's what you guys do. And it's changed so much for us. It's made it really, really great. So I'm not surprised that people in the past would be reticent to hire across Europe. But yeah, I think with Oyster, it's actually super easy. It's just like hiring a person.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear. And how did you first, like how did Impala and Oyster first get connected? I actually don't know the details behind that.
Yeah, so I actually spoke to Tony at the very early stages because he knew that we were dealing with this issue. Tony, I think, is a good, knows Ben quite well and knew that we were struggling with this thing. And so we spoke to Tony a bit, really loved the mission, which was genuinely to sort of connect and help people get employed across the world and sort of integrate that with a lot of various different sort of areas of the employee life cycle. So we'd looked into a few others in the past, and to me it all seemed as much of kind of a minefield around understanding what was really happening. So yeah, that's actually how we found Oyster.
Awesome. Yeah, I can relate to the challenges that you're facing in a past life. I also led a people ops team, and I remember like as the company grew and just more and more people were getting hired, it was like, okay, so we have this many people in this country. Like, what does that mean? How do we continue to make sure everybody does feel very like connected to each other? And so, I appreciate you sharing these challenges because I know I've been there and I know a lot of our listeners have been there. And one thing that I think will continue to be true as there are solutions to make hiring logistically easier is then it frees up your time and my time and other people ops people's time to think about. And I love the word that you've used, intentional, because that's a word I use a lot too. Like, how do you build culture and to be intentionally inclusive? And like, let's focus on that and like the experience and not so much the headaches of contracts and payments and things like that.
Yeah.
I've been there. I can relate.
Yeah. And there's like just random things you'd never even think would be an issue, like number of holidays per, you know, something in different countries. Yeah, I swear they do it on purpose.
I know. I like looking at all of the different countries and like who gets the most holidays. And it's always been interesting for me because, you know, I'm from the US where we historically don't have a lot of holidays. And now I live in Spain where there are tons of days where like Spain randomly shops are closed or you aren't allowed to go to the gym because it's a holiday. So I've always loved looking at that list and being like, how do I want my life to be?
Yeah, love that.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for sharing all this information. We have one last segment that is a fun little game I'd love to play with you. But before we jump into that, I'm curious to sum things up. If you could look back at yourself a year ago, what are the top like one or two things you wish you knew to help build and continue to grow a solid remote strategy within a growing company?
A year ago, I'd tell myself to take COVID more seriously. A year ago, I think nurturing like psychological safety is something that's really come up as a topic to really think about and sort of, you know, consider more than normal. So it's something we've actually always talked about in Impala and always kind of tracked as a KPI within the people team. But I think like even sort of, I would tell myself to think more about that and think, you know, more, because employee well-being is so important. And, you know, we've all seen what that looks like now.
Yeah, even more important today, I would say, than a year ago. So that's great to hear. All right. So for our last segment, I wish this is one thing I've said every podcast so far, and season two, it's coming, where I need like a little fun music for this part of it. But it's called Pearls of Wisdom. And basically the way this game works is it's a rapid fire. I'm going to say something and don't overthink it. Just the first thing that comes to your mind as a fun way to end the podcast today. Does that sound good?
That sounds fab. Let's do it.
Awesome. So what is your favorite remote work tool?
Oh, boring, but Slack. I mean, it's like where our community is. It's where the GIFs are happening. I'd say Slack.
What is the tool you find most challenging to work with?
Oh, that's a good one. I'm overthinking it. So I think Loom for me is something. I love the concept of Loom, but personally I'm like, I'll listen to that later at the end of the day and I always forget. So I struggle with remembering to do that.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. Like different people have different preferred ways of hearing or reading communication. Yeah. So having everything available rather than nothing available. How do you like to take a break when you're feeling overwhelmed?
So my favorite way and the only way at the moment is going for a lovely walk around the countryside. Usually though, going to a nice cafe, like working from a cafe, or literally just like getting a nice lunch and sort of switching off. Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds good. I can't wait till I have professionally made coffee rather than whatever I made in this cup. What is your biggest personal challenge when it comes to working remotely?
I would just say I miss having an office available, like at the moment with COVID. And I think it's good to have some kind of office, whether that's like a co-located office or whether that's just an office that you go to, you know, co-work by yourself with sort of other people.
Yeah, great. And when you can work again with other people, who is someone real or fake, living or dead, that you would love to co-work with?
Oh, I'm so bad at these questions. It's like the thing where you just like forget everyone that's ever existed. Okay. I think maybe Amy Edmondson, who really champions psychological safety. And I'd love to see her in practice sort of live that and live kind of what she talks a lot about. And talk to her about how to do that really well remotely.
I think that's awesome. And then you can come back and share everything that you learned with me, because yes. I want to know too.
Yeah.
And last but not least, what is your favorite piece of advice that you have ever gotten?
Oh, so I got advice about 2.5 years ago to get a job that really just makes me happy and I can kind of do what I want and not just be tied into some kind of, you know, career death trap. And so that's kind of what actually got me into Impala. So that was a great piece of advice for me.
I love that. Do what you love, do it with intentionality. And, you know, make sure that you take time to shut off.
Yes, definitely.
Very cool. Well, Tilly, thank you so much for joining us today. This was a great conversation. Where can people follow up with you if they want to learn more about Impala or if they have questions about people operations?
Yeah. So you can send me an email. I'm always available on email. So tilly@impala.travel. There's also a bunch of email of content and sort of information on our blog, which is impala.travel/blog. Yeah, I'm also on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Yeah, I just noticed Impala recently posted their culture deck. So for all of our listeners wanting to really dive in deep to the topics that Tilly and I talked about today, feel free to go onto their blog and take a look there. So thanks everybody for joining this episode of Distributed Discussions, and stay tuned for more of season 1 coming soon.